Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
After economic development corruption scandals, Governor Andrew Cuomo and the state comptroller Tom DiNapoli have finalized a plan to restore the comptroller's auditing powers over economic development contracts. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Back in 2011, Cuomo persuaded the legislature to agree to limit the comptroller's oversight ability for some economic development projects. They included the $750 million subsidy for the Solar City project that was part of an initiative Cuomo called the Buffalo Billion. At the time, Cuomo said the additional oversight slowed down the bidding and construction process. Since then, bid rigging and bribery scandals related to the Buffalo Billion, as well as other economic development contracts, led to federal corruption charges and prison terms for several of Cuomo's former associates, including his former closest aide, Joe Prococo. The former head of the State University's Polytechnic Institute, Elaine Calleros, who helped cut the deals for many of the contracts, is also facing a jail term, though he's currently free while appealing his conviction. Last March, Cuomo and DiNapoli struck a verbal agreement to reinstate the comptroller's audit powers over the projects. But the actual details of the agreement languished, according to DiNapoli, who spoke about it in late July in an interview with public radio.
The spirit is there, but the actual translating the intent into a practice has not happened.
Government reform groups complained that the governor was dragging his feet in setting up the arrangements, something Cuomo's office denied. Late on a Friday afternoon in the middle of August, the governor and controller finally issued a joint memo of understanding. It restores the controller's oversight authority beginning on September 15th. John Caney, with the government reform group Reinvent Albany, says that's good news.
It clearly is a step forward, increases in accountability, and decreases corruption risk.
The agreement also provides an additional layer of oversight. The State Inspector General's office, which is part of Cuomo's administration, will have the authority to review the controller's audits. Caney says the more oversight, the better, and he says the IG's new powers will improve transparency. But he says the Inspector General won't have equal powers with the controller when it comes to the contracts.
The Inspector General doesn't get to approve them. They just get to see them in their entirety. That's different from what the comptroller is able to do, which is actually to reject contracts that they think are tainted or don't meet state requirements.
Caney says ultimately, though, the governor and legislature need to pass a law to restore the oversight powers. Governor Cuomo did not comment about the finalized agreement. A spokesman for the controller said in a statement that it's an important step forward in enhancing accountability in state contracting. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. I guess the day has arrived, Alan. We're learning from our Karen DeWitt in this week's show. After economic development corruption scandals, Governor Andrew Cuomo, the governor, and the state comptroller Tom DiNapoli have finalized a plan to restore the comptroller's auditing powers over economic development contracts.
Well, David, I think I was first on the pony, to be honest with you. I was infuriated by this. The legislature, together with the governor, took away the comptroller's powers to pre-audit. We do know that there's a very good chance that the hanky-panky that went on between some of Cuomo's top aides who are either in prison or on their way to prison right now might not have happened had the comptroller had that power. I'm saying it would have. I'm saying it's a very good chance he would have caught it. We have a comptroller, a separate branch of government, for a reason. The Constitution says it. We want that controller to basically audit things. Auditors find criminality all the time. In my little town of Great Barrington, Massachusetts now, there is a town tax collector who is accused of siphoning off $100,000. A little office in a little town, and it was caught by the auditors. That's what auditors are for. We all know it. When the governor and the legislature took that away, as you know, David, from the very first moment, I was infuriated by it. It's not only that I like Tom DiNapoli and I trust him. It's that that office needs to be independent, needs to be doing these kinds of audits. I don't think that the governor was prepared, frankly, for the kind of pushback that he was going to get. He got it, and now I think there's one thing about this governor. He sees when he has to make a change, and he's made that change. Should it be put back into the law? It should. Is a handshake sufficient? It isn't. Nevertheless, we'll take what we can get.
Well, not only were you the first to talk about it, the idea that it got taken away and by the legislature, but DiNapoli recently thanked you for pushing it. He credited your efforts with helping get those powers back.
I never want to think I'm more important than I am. I'm a very insignificant cog, but I seen my duty and I done it.
Well, of course, we had the big dust-up with Chris Cuomo from CNN's Primetime and what was a alleged troll who was baiting him using the word Fredo from The Godfather, and you went in a long conversation with the governor about a variety of issues and then landed on that issue. And Governor Cuomo agreed with his brother and said this is an ethnic slur to Italians, no matter what is said about it, including criticizing the Times Union, Casey Siler's column on the issue, and the editor Rex Smith.
David, I have to say, I have done many interviews with many politicians, as we all know. I'm sitting there, and I ask him about the Fredo story because I think it's just so interesting. And he explodes. I mean, I never saw anything like it. I didn't expect it. He really is very sensitive, and quite correctly, about the anti-Italian kind of slurs that exist in this country. I know it. I worked in the United States Congress as a kid, as an intern, and I got to tell you, I heard it all the time. We know there's anti-Semitism out there. We know that there is anti-Italian tropism, the kind of thing we saw where a guy walks up to him. Sure. Now, look, we all know that if you lose it, you lose it. You shouldn't lose your temper. Who knows that better than I do? I know because I have a temper. And I know that every time you take the bait and you get angry, the other guy wins. You walk away, you put your hands in your pocket. I had a guy say, take the first swing at me, take the first swing at me. He was much younger than I was. But you put your hands in your pocket, you walk away, you win. You take him on, you start yelling, you call him an idiot. You lose because there will be a lot of people who say you shouldn't have lost your temper. I know that, and I was in deep sympathy with Chris Cuomo. I got exactly where he was. I knew exactly what he was doing. I could feel that pain. Here he was with his wife and his kid, and he felt that the itch needed scratching, and he scratched it. He knows he did the wrong thing, maybe not from an emotional point of view, but you can't let those guys win.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustinum. Ulster County has a new law setting term limits for elected county officials and legislators. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
Democratic Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan signed the law Tuesday outside the historic New York State Senate House in Kingston.
I think in passing and signing this law, we are recognizing that we have to constantly reinvigorate and re-energize our democracy, and that ultimately no elected office should belong to any individual, but it always has to remain in the hands of the people.
Ryan says Ulster is now one of just a few counties in New York to implement term limits for countywide elected officials and members of the legislature.
For legislators, it's 6 2-year terms, so a total of 12. And for countywide executive and comptroller and so on, it's 3 4-year terms. So for anyone serving, it limits them to 12 years of total time, which I think is really important to allow for that reinvigoration and kind of new blood to come in.
Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro signed similar legislation earlier this year, also for the same number of terms for legislators and elected county officials. Under state law, term limits cannot be set for county clerk, sheriff, district attorney, or judges. County Legislature Republican Minority Leader Ken Ronk of Wallkill says it's the sort of legislation he first introduced in 2013 and had tried to get passed since.
I'm just thrilled that it's finally happening, that we're finally going to have term limits for the people of Ulster County.
Ronk, calling the legislation his favorite to be signed during his tenure, is one of the bill's main sponsors.
I've always gotten a lot of laughs when I say these things in my minority addresses, my chairman's addresses, that I never believed in term limits until I got elected to the Ulster County Legislature. And I saw the kind of, you know, lifetime service that you had in the legislature. I recall one time I was first elected to the legislature, I got in the elevator to go up to the sixth floor for my first committee meeting, and there was a legislator got in with me, and he looked at me and he scoffed at me, and he said, "I used to be like you. I used to get all dressed up and want to come to these meetings. Now I can't stand to come to them." And I thought, man, if I ever get like that, get me out.
Democratic legislator Joseph Maloney of Saugerties.
And I think term limits, quite frankly, puts the people back on the priority list.
Maloney sponsored the bill with Ronk.
When you have a lot of career politicians and people that want to stay forever and appointees that want to stay forever, you end up kicking the can down the road, and tough decisions that the people may not like that are better 20 and 30 years from now don't end up happening.
The term limits proposal was adopted at the July session of the Ulster County Legislature. Ryan was elected county executive in an April special election and faces another election in November.
I promise you that we will work every single day to ensure that in everything we do, big and small, we stick to this core principle that I think is at the foundation of our identity as a country and a community, that government exists to serve the people, not the other way around.
Again, Ronk.
It's really interesting that the term that this law finally passed in was the term when in the previous election we had the most turnover, I think, that we've ever had in the county legislature. And I think that that's telling, because once you get the career politicians out of the legislature and bring in new voices and new ideas, like Legislator Maloney, who fought so hard for this, I think that, you know, really great things can happen.
And here's Maloney.
And I think that you'll see a bigger push, like I said, for things like the RRA. You know, I think we need to spend some money, and we have it, to start talking about processing recyclables in-house, locally. That takes money and equipment. It's going to take an overhaul over there.
RRA is the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency, and he hopes there is a bigger push to spend money to turn Tech City, a former IBM plant, into a tax revenue-producing business hub. The term limits law will take effect in 2020, meaning office holders elected in November 2019 will be subject to the term limits. The law, as in Dutchess, is not retroactive.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Environmental group is supporting the New York Attorney General's office effort to reopen a petition asking that a rail line in the Adirondacks be declared abandoned. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
For over a year, the fate of a 30-mile section of rail tracks in the Adirondacks has been in limbo. The Tahoe's line was operated by Chicago-based Iowa Pacific Holdings as the Saratoga and North Creek Railway. After several controversies, including parking hundreds of empty tankers along the tracks in the Adirondacks, Iowa Pacific sought a buyer of the tracks. Last year, New York officials asked the Federal Surface Transportation Board to declare adverse abandonment, but then agreed to postpone proceedings while a buyer was sought. The State Attorney General's office has now reactivated the petition. Adirondack Council Executive Director Willie Janeway says the move would assure that Iowa Pacific can never again use the rail line in what he calls an inappropriate manner.
Abandonment is a term that is greatly and very easily misunderstood. What we are asking the Surface Transportation Board is to have Iowa Pacific abandon any rights it has to use the rail line. It does not mean the rail line comes up. It does not mean the rail line as a rail line is abandoned. It means that Iowa Pacific abandons its rights, creating an opportunity for the state to take the lead, working with local government and others to determine the best future use for this corridor that supports local communities and is consistent with the wild and scenic rivers and the preservation of the Adirondack Park.
Essex and Warren counties also own portions of the tracks between Newcomb and North Creek. Town of Horicon Supervisor Matt Simpson, Warren County's Public Works, Parks, and Railroad Committee Chair, says the county put out a request for proposals for lease or purchase. They are currently negotiating with United Rail to operate on the section of tracks that the county owns.
This line has two different things happening here. You've got the Tahawus mine, which we all would love to see jobs created. And we also would like to see a benefit of our ownership. Actually, it's a greater length of railroad that the taxpayers actually own in Warren County than there is north of us. We want to lessen that cost to the taxpayers. And everything is basically being vetted. All the options are on the table, you know, as far as the use of that corridor. And that abandonment action at the STB really doesn't preclude freight service or a tourist train operating on either our line or the Tahawus line.
Simpson adds that an adverse abandonment declaration against Iowa Pacific would provide greater local control over the rail corridor.
I think that will give, I believe, everybody control that we won't have a repeat of the storage of cars, you know, the tankers on the line. We don't feel that it has a negative impact on us at this point. You know, and paramount to us is having control of our 40 miles that we own. That comes at a huge cost in Warren County.
The Adirondack Council does not expect the Surface Transportation Board to review the petition until at least September.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. There are over 105,000 medical marijuana patients in New York State. However, that number lags behind many other states, including Florida, which has over twice as many patients in half the time. In addition, many New York medical marijuana patients are flocking over the border to Massachusetts to take advantage of cheaper and more alternatives. In the first part of my interview with Lynn Perodnick, a medical marijuana doctor in New York, we talk about
this move around the country. Many states not only have medical marijuana programs, but have moved to legalize the recreational use of marijuana. One of them, Massachusetts, bordering New York, has seen a number of medical marijuana patients flocking across the border to get, as this article that drew me to you from Bethany Bump and the Times Union says, for better, cheaper products. Yes, we're hearing from those folks over at the various medical and recreational dispensaries that New Yorkers, and including medical marijuana patients, are going over the border for those products as well as the cheaper price.
Well, it's even more than that. Many patients in New York are frustrated with what's available to them. There is no flower and there are no edibles. Seniors in particular love, particularly cancer patients, old women who are not so comfortable with the idea of using marijuana. If it comes in a cookie, it seems a lot less stigmatized. If it's an official pharmaceutical, they get nervous. So many families have found that if they just go to the border, bring back some nice candy cookies, grandma and grandpa are much happier. It's not really working with old people who just want to get high. It's actually working with patients. Families are finding ways to make this simpler, easier. Cost is a factor, but most of the families I see, they really want comfort. And by being able to get products that are really simple to use, it makes sense. However, they still want the education that New York provides its patients. They want to be in the program. They start looking at, you know, what New York can provide. Some seniors will start the program, and the families realize that there's just, it is not quite working out. So by going to Massachusetts, they're able to get quality products that are known to be what is on the label, meaning mold-free, pesticide-free, contents as stated, and they're able to get a little advice up there, and these products are working for their parents, their friends, their relatives. Also, people, kids on the spectrum, many parents have found Massachusetts to be able to go and get what their kid needs, really helpful. Autism is not a qualifying condition in New York. We have a huge population of kids on the spectrum. Those kids can get into the New York program through PTSD or chronic pain. Many of them have IBS and bowel issues. So that's the first hurdle. Then it's difficult getting a kid to eat oil that tastes distasteful. So by working with edibles, they're able to get a longer effect, and they're able to get consumption of products that do help their kids. So there's many reasons other than just cost to take that trip to Massachusetts.
Let's stick with cost for a minute, because that is a difference. There's two angles, I guess, here. One is those who can't afford, do not have the means, would cost, I saw one estimate, $2,400 a year. That's not easy for everyone, and it should be something that's available to anyone who could qualify. The other part of this is we always hear about legalization, getting rid of the black market, but if it's more expensive, it keeps the black market going, right?
Absolutely. You're right on both scores. Firstly, patients spend between $100 and $400 a month on their products in New York, which is a lot for out-of-pocket costs. Medicare, Medicaid does not pay for this. Marijuana, the big problem is it's still considered a Class 1 substance, which puts it in the same category as heroin and says that it has no medical efficacy. Well, that's got to change. There's so much, it's so loaded. And then, yes, Massachusetts is providing quality products. The black market is bigger than ever. With the advent of all these different concentrates, live resin, wax, shatter, these are strong products that certain patients actually need. In New York, they don't have super strong patients. I have a quadriplegic patient who's been in bed for 8 years, and he uses wax, shatter, live resin to take care of his pain. He can't get it in New York, so his family goes to Massachusetts for him. Available on the black market, but the problem is, for a sick person, if you're venturing out to the black market, you don't know what you're getting. There's no reliable testing, pesticide mold contents, and we don't want to make sick people sicker. So Massachusetts gets a little handy. New York is really working on getting a recreational program up, and with that, there's promise of more products for people. There's also what's called Rick Simpson oil, which is a super concentrate that has proven effective with certain cancers. Effective meaning that tumor size decreases, people live longer, have better quality lives. This isn't even offered in New York. You get into that concept of there's no double-blind studies in the United States. Well, as a Class 1 substance, it's very difficult to do a research project with these issues. So there's just a lot that needs to be tuned up to move forward.
One of the anecdotes mentioned by one of the medical marijuana dispensaries in Massachusetts was that many, when they ask, you know, as they come in, how did you hear about us or what are you looking for, they are told, well, I'm a medical marijuana patient in New York. Can I use my medical ID here? And the answer, of course, is no. It's not legal to cross state lines. But imagine if there was an agreement, especially with people who had a medical license, an ID, to be able to go over there legally, free of the anxiety of being caught.
Absolutely. And that's an interesting consideration. Maine offers reciprocity for New York patients. I used to have to get a special form from Ginger at the Department of Health. No longer. If a New York patient goes with their card and their certification, they can purchase products in the Maine dispensaries. And the prices in Maine are even less than Connecticut, and the quality is as good, if not better, and there are many products available. So that's even a little further north, but I have a number of patients who make that little vacation.
Of course, at the outset, if you're going to apply for a medical marijuana ID card, you need to qualify under a number of conditions set out. And you've talked about in our earlier interview that aired months ago now that you would even consider more conditions to be added to that list. Can you give us a sense of what's on the list and what you would add?
Okay. As far as what's on the list, it's pretty restrictive. New York has a pretty stringent code. What is on there is chronic pain, which by definition is 13 weeks or more of pain. It can be a broken rotator cuff to anything from IBS, Crohn's disease. There are many, many things, migraines, all that's considered chronic pain. Then there's cancer, HIV, ALS, Parkinson's disease, MS. They have spinal cord injury with spasticity, epilepsy, IBS, Crohn's disease, neuropathy, Huntington's disease, PTSD, and opioid use disorder if enrolled in a qualifying treatment program. That's what's legal in New York. As far as issues that are coming up, spectrum is very important. Anxiety and depression, results have been very nice using these products. Last evening I was at Canna Gather in New York City, and they had Representative Maloney. She's in Congress for us, and she was speaking a lot about what's going on, changes. And one of the suggestions that has been put forth in New York is a little box at the doctor's discretion, which means that if a physician or NPH or PA feels that a patient would benefit from medical marijuana, it's theirs. That'll be a game changer in this city.
So that's like an override, right, Lynn? So
basically,
whatever's on the list of qualifications, if a physician feels, even if it's not on the list, that you need it, you can check that box.
Exactly. And that really opens up the doors to be able to give people quality medical care with these products.
That's Dr. Lynn Perodnik, a medical marijuana doctor in New York. We'll hear the second part of my interview with Lynn on medical marijuana on next week's program. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1934, or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.